You found Primetime Action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It is hour number three of VSiN's Primetime Action, live from the South Point here in Las Vegas. Gil Alexander, Matt Brown, and Kelly Bidlin, so glad you could hang with us tonight. As you do, I hope, every Friday night, where we go through the NFL injury reports to solidify what you ought to bet and what you probably shouldn't bet on the upcoming weekend's NFL games, that slate of games. We will interrupt our flow of NFL games a little later on. We'll do our Circa contest entry selection debate. We'll do that and let you know what is actually in our accounts beyond contest of our bets in the NFL once we've gotten through all the games. So three more games to get to. But first, let's talk some UFC 266 with our man, Jordan Sherwood. How you doing, Jordan?
Doing well and always exciting to join you guys on a Friday night, especially when there's a big fight card the next night with two title fights and the return of Nick Diaz. So pleasure to be with you guys today.
Yeah, can I just say this? John Jones went and found himself arrested again this morning.
I was on Twitter about this earlier on today. Like, you know, the 30 for 30 about John Jones is going to be akin to the Last Dance. There's going to be 10 episodes about John Jones because that guy has a doctored career outside the cage and inside the cage. It's unfortunate yet again. Hopefully he rights the ship and gets the heavyweight in the second half of next year.
Yeah, hopefully.
Just an incredible amount of wasted talent, though.
So much.
Just so much wasted time, wasted talent, wasted everything. It's just it's a shame.
He is the Bronx Tale, that is for sure. Wasted talent. He is the Bronx Tale.
Let's start with the undercard, Jordan. What do you like here? I see some recognizable names like Dan Hooker and others. What do you got?
Yeah, and it's funny you mentioned the Dan Hooker fight, and that's an interesting one with Nasrat Hamsrat and Dan Hooker. I mean, both guys struggled to get to Vegas, visa issues, travel issues, and, you know, luckily both guys made weight. I mean, I think it was shocking that both guys made the lightweight limit. Everybody's high on Dan Hooker, and rightly so. He's been in with better fighters, but I don't like his last two performances. And you know, he's been in war with Dustin Poirier. I think it's knocked down in the first round against Michael Chandler, and Chandler's a big hitter. And Hasmaran's not as big a hitter as Chandler, but I'm kind of leaning towards Hooker now being on the downside of his career, that chin just not holding up anymore. So as a dog in that fight with those travel issues, I view that as a mere pick'em fight. So I'll take Hasmaran just questioning Dan Hooker's chin, because Hasmaran can certainly thump with the best of them in lightweight.
So as we head to the main card here, you said the return of Nick Diaz. He finds himself as a slight underdog right now, about plus 140 over at DraftKings to Robbie Lawler, minus 160. Listen, this seems to me, and it looked like even from what we saw in, you know, kind of the shape even maybe that he showed up in, this almost looks like, I'm not going to definitely say it's a money grab, Jordan, but it certainly looks like maybe a dude who wanted a paycheck. What do you think here about Diaz and Lawler?
I mean, it's funny. I mean, the fight, you know, all week leading up until they arrived in Vegas was a virtual pick'em. And then Nick Diaz started the shadow box. He showed up in these press conferences, and all of a sudden all this money flowed in on Robbie Lawler just because Nick Diaz looked out of shape. And he didn't look like the normal Nick Diaz, but the dude's 39 years of age. And, you know, look, he hasn't been competing regularly in the UFC or MMA. He hasn't had a win since 2011. But here's what I'll say about Nick Diaz and why I think there's value, especially now at plus 140. The blueprint is out on how to beat Robbie Lawler. You avoid the big punch and you pressure him for as many rounds as the fight lasts. Colby Covington did it. Neil Magny did it in his last fight, a victory over Robbie Lawler. And Robbie Lawler is not the same power puncher that he was as UFC welterweight champion. And albeit that, again, Nick Diaz has not won since 2011, and that was over BJ Penn. Last time we saw him in the octagon, he was lying down in the center against Anderson Silva. But that's the type of fighter he is. Pressure fighter, can go for five rounds, and I have no doubts that he can. This is a guy that does the decathlons just for fun. So value on Nick Diaz for me. He's a guy that doesn't get finished. Robbie Lawler is going to need a home run shot. So I think Nick Diaz at plus 140 is certainly the play for tomorrow night.
All right, we're going to flash up all your bets here. But before we get to the main event, you have two other plays that you like here as well?
Yeah, I certainly do. I mean, in the other big, you know, undercard fight of the main card is Curtis Blaydes and, you know, Rozenstruik, two heavyweight, you know, and Curtis Blaydes is coming off of that knockout loss against Derek Lewis. But the dude's a wrestler. He's a grinder. And I think Rozenstruik, even though he has about 80% takedown defense and likes to keep the fight standing, Curtis Blaydes at plus 200 is certainly a play for me. I think he wins the fight via unanimous decision. And the other fight, Valentina Shevchenko. Look, she's one of the greatest fighters that we have currently on the roster, not just in women's mixed martial arts, but between the men and the women. And although Lauren Murphy has never been finished in her mixed martial arts career, 19 fights, I have heard that Shevchenko needs to have a showcase here. There's a fight that she wants. She wants badly. She wants a third go at Amanda Nunes. And the way to do that is to finish a fighter that's never been finished before. And I understand a lot of people are saying, no, it's going five rounds because Valentina flip-flops between decision wins and finishes. She just finished Jessica Andrade in her last fight. I don't buy it. Valentina's here to make a statement. She's here to finish a fighter. And I don't see Lauren Murphy succumbing to a TKO. So I think it's a submission at a plus 450. I love it, and I'm going to play it tomorrow night.
And you're fading Jessica Andrade in this on this card?
I am, and that has to do with her last effort. I'm high on Cynthia Calvillo, and I understand that Caitlin Chookagian, you know, beat her up for three rounds on the feet her last time out. But I like Cynthia Calvillo. I think she's ever improving as a striker. She's the best grappler that Andrade is going to face in a very long time. I think Cynthia Calvillo is not going to beat around the bush. She's going to look to take the fight to the ground, and as a plus 225 underdog, I love the value on her. I think that she could be a future star in the flyweight division, and you can do it against a former champion and on Jessica Andrade.
In the main event, you're going to go ahead and go with Volkanovski. Ortega obviously was cruising along in his career, and then just that loss to Max Holloway, which really just seemed like to kind of derail everything for him there for a while. You're not afraid to go ahead and lay the big number here to get Volkanovski all the way up to minus 180 now at DraftKings.
I'm not. And look, Matt, you know, Ortega looked great in his last fight. I was fading him against Chan Sung Jung, and he outstruck him for five rounds. So Ortega definitely did some work between that 2018 loss to Holloway and 2019, the win over Chan Sung Jung. But since then, look, Volkanovski is the kingpin of this division now. I think he's just a better striker. I think he's got, you know, takedown defense. It's not going to, you know, be a worrisome for an Ortega shoot or an Ortega slick submission. And Volkanovski is not going to go hunting and get caught in a guillotine. So just a better overall fighter, probably a decision victory for Volkanovski, but I like him, and I'll certainly lay that price at $1.80 because I think he's just a better overall fighter.
Jordan Sherwood, everybody, at Wood on 106.3 if you want to follow him on Twitter. Jordan, we appreciate it as always, man.
All right, fellas, have a great night and good luck tomorrow, and look forward to talking to you soon.
You too. We will indeed. We look forward to talking to Jordan time and time again with UFC fights. Let's squeeze in a last afternoon football game, shall we? Before we get to the primetime games, the Seahawks at the Vikings, one of the more closely lined games of the weekend.
So Vikings offensive tackle Christian Darrisaw actually ended up having surgery. He is out. Linebacker Anthony Barr out for them as well. Dalvin Cook, listen, is questionable, but he was a DNP Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he won't play, because they asked Mike Zimmer whether he, you know, because he didn't practice all week, does that mean he's not going to play? And he said, well, that's Dalvin. So, you know, it's Dalvin Cook. So basically saying, like, if Dalvin Cook tells me he's going to play, then Dalvin Cook is going to
coach
go play.
Speak.
So, yes. So doesn't matter. That apparently doesn't matter that he was a DNP Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. On the Seahawks side of things, Rashad Penny out. Brandon Schell, starting right tackle for the Seahawks, is out in this thing. I think the only way that I look at this one is there will be points. Both of these defenses have not shown us anything that there's going to be any sort of consistent play from them at all. And then, look, both offensive actually look pretty good as well. I mean, the Seahawks certainly collapsed a little bit last week, but I think if they keep their foot on the gas here, this is a shootout, I think, potential here all over the place with this game. So for me, it's an over or pass, but I don't have a play on the side because it's so inconsistent from both of these teams. Mainly on the defensive side of the ball, but even on the offense, I mean, you know, you're so efficient doing one thing. It's basically mirror images of the same team here. It's like super efficient passing the ball with playmakers at the wide receiver position that other teams would dream of, and yet coaches who still want to just run guys into the middle of the line, even if whether it's working or whether it's not, and really taking away what they're doing best, you know. And so for me, I'll sit back, watch it. I think there'll be a ton of points in this thing. I think 54 might even be a little shy in this.
Yeah,
thing.
I played just tied one teaser leg into the Vikings, not what I went big on. The Dalvin Cook. I did it a few days ago. The Dalvin Cook news throughout the week's not been great, although I do have a feeling he's probably going to play in that game. Having lost two games by 4 points, I think getting up to 7.5, 8 is probably a good, is still a good bet on a teaser leg.
Well, I mean, look, the Seahawks only play one score games. Like, it's just what they do. They will not allow, they will not blow any team out, whether they should or whether it is like, it is given to them, handed to them. They're up 17. They're up 21. They're up whatever. They play one score games. It's just Pete Carroll's like, oh, we're up a lot. Let's run it. Time to run it. Let's go. Let's go, guys. He's just sitting there waiting to get up by 10 points. So Russ, like, run it. Let's run it.
Take a back seat. It. Time to hand the ball off.
Run the ball. Here we go now. We're up 10. We got
to
run it.
He just wants to make sure that the opponent realizes that they're going to establish the run under any circumstance.
Doesn't matter if we are up 10. We've been throwing at a 80% clip and having success rate, you know, over 70%. Doesn't matter.
Yankees fans got to be very pumped. 7-0. It remains top of the sixth against the Red Sox. Yankees just been hitting the ball all over Fenway tonight. Yankees, again, two games behind the Red Sox, but Yankees, more importantly, one game ahead of the Blue Jays for that number two wild card position. I can't imagine what the number is on the Red Sox right now. We'll effort that for you if there even is one. Probably a spread.
Plus 7.5, minus 145.
Oh, there you go.
Garrett Cole did end up giving up a hit,
yes,
two of
did.
Them, actually. Yeah. But five innings, two hits. Hasn't walked anyone since those first three walks, five strikeouts. He's been pretty efficient, so he's only at 73 pitches, so he might get another inning or two, depending on what he does out there.
Yankees also pumped because the Blue Jays are trailing the Twins 3-0 at the top of the fourth. Blue Jays having all kinds of trouble with the Twins. That would be a huge quiniella, those two things happening for the Yankees. If the Yankees won and the Blue Jays lost, give them a bit of a cushion. Cardinals well on their way to their 13th straight win. Is that 13? Yes, I think. Or is it 14 tonight? I've lost count already. My goodness. They're up on the Cubs 8-2. Giants and Rockies tied 2-2 in that NL West struggle. We'll come back Sunday night, Monday Night Football. Peace.
You are looking live at primetime action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Once again, back on primetime action, Gil, Matt, and Kelly. Just to clean it up, Cardinals looking for their 14th straight win tonight. They had their 13th earlier in the first of the doubleheader with the Cubs today. They're up 8-3, well on their way, top of the third. 13 was their longest winning streak since 1935 for that franchise. So they're just setting all kinds of franchise records and look like they're never going to lose another baseball game. The Cardinals, who have just made a mockery of the number two wild card, the race for the number two wild card race. Reds have tied up the Nationals. Reds desperately trying to cling on to hopes. They're more than five back of the Cardinals at this point. So this is really desperation at this point for the Reds. 4-4 against the Nats. And by the way, if you missed it earlier, Juan Soto's consecutive plate appearances, 12 in a row reaching base, was snapped on a strikeout earlier in this one.
And a fairly big moment there in this Pirates-Phillies, 2-1. One out, they trail by one. They are only two games back of the Braves.
Yes, that is, the Phillies have found their path, and it is not the wild card. It is the division, and they still have three more games left with the Atlanta Braves. Let's do Sunday Night Football and Monday Night Football. We start with the Sunday night game. The Packers at the 49ers. This is three now, and this has been an interesting one this week. We just anecdotally, I've heard a lot of love when it was 3.5, heard a lot of love for the Packers from folks. And then I have heard equal passion for the other side saying, oh, I don't buy into the Packers thing at all. I don't care if it is 3.5. I love the Niners. Where do you stand here?
I have a 4 in my account on the Packers. Another one I'm not incredibly in love with after the injury news kind of came out. So Elgton Jenkins, their left guard that has slid over to left tackle to play left tackle while David Bakhtiari was out, he is doubtful for this game. So you don't have your left tackle. You don't have the guy who's filling in for your left tackle in this game. That's a pretty big deal when you rely on Aaron Rodgers and throwing the ball as much as this team
sure is.
Does. And so really don't like my bet as much as I did whenever I made it. Unfortunately, sometimes that's just the way things go. On the Niners side of things, defensive end Eric Armstead's questionable. Javon Kinlaw, defensive tackle's questionable. Emmanuel Mosley is questionable, and running back Elijah Mitchell's doubtful. That said, Trey Sermon did get cleared from concussion protocol. So it looks like the ever-evolving backfield is going back to Trey Sermon.
Play,
yeah, so it will be Trey Sermon in this one.
Chris Thompson's like, I just got signed.
Come on, man, ready to go.
I know, he's sitting there going, like, don't get cleared, don't get cleared. No, he got cleared. Yeah, so anyway, Trey Sermon gets cleared. Looks like he will be your running back here for the 49ers in this one. It looks like Kinlaw, Mosley probably are on the good side of questionable. The Eric Armstead, the defensive end, he went DNP, DNP, and then limited practice today. So while that's a good sign that he did get in a limited practice today, he did have two DNPs on Wednesday and Thursday. So something to consider there. This is one of these things where, you know, I'm going with what I saw with my eyeballs and not the numbers here, which I typically don't ever do. Like, the Packers don't get any pressure on the quarterback whatsoever. And we know that's where Jimmy G really is. That's where really you get after Jimmy G. I mean, this team, if you can get pressure on him, he makes bad decisions, he's inaccurate, all this stuff like that. But if he has time, he's a very above average quarterback in the NFL, yeah. Right? Like, it's just, the problem is under pressure, he's absolutely horrible. When he has to make second and third reads, he's pretty bad. He becomes inaccurate, all that. Well, the Packers are last in the NFL in sack percentage. They actually only have one on the entire season. They're tied for last in quarterback pressures. They're 21st in pass rush win rate. And Garoppolo, this is the other thing. So that's what the Packers do bad. And the one thing the 49ers have done good so far this year is protect Garoppolo. He's only been hit or sacked on 3.3% of dropbacks, the lowest rate in the league so far. That said, you look, and the success of the 49ers have really come on yak and not really from great throws and these guys getting open and all the stuff like that that you see with a lot of these other teams. 63.8% of San Francisco's receiving yards have been yak.
Just in the mind's eye, though, doesn't it feel like that's always the case with them? Not only this year, but last year, too.
Yeah. Because you get guys like a Debo Samuel who, you know.
You see him just flying across the field with the ball already. Yeah.
And so you look at something like that, and you're like, okay, at least that number is unsustainable for sure. I mean, you can't get 64% of your yards after the catch. I mean, it's just not sustainable like that. But you do look, and you do wonder if that is like, going to be sustainable this week, though, because Jimmy Garoppolo is going to be sitting back in the pocket and having all day to throw the ball. That said, it did look like Aaron Rodgers last week started to get back in the rhythm of things. He looked like a guy in week one that hadn't done any camp and hadn't been practicing and hadn't been throwing with his receivers and all stuff like that. Like, it looked like a guy who was rusty. And then it looked like that started to wear off through the course of week two. And now we're heading into week three of the NFL. It's Aaron Rodgers, the MVP of the league last year. And so it has me just feeling like this is kind of where the Packers start to put it together a little bit as well. And honestly, they ran the ball pretty effectively last week with Aaron Jones, hitting him out of the backfield several different times as well. And I'm just, this is a bet on talent here, bet on quarterback that I think is, I'm getting more than a field goal with in a game that I think is probably closer to a pick 'em.
Yeah. Pretty heavy lean to the Green Bay side for me. I didn't bet it. I still want to see more out of these teams, but as we'll talk about next segment, it is in my contest picks for the week at over three, getting that 3.5 was one that I put in for the contest pick. So yeah, I definitely lean that side too.
Speaking of over a field goal, Monday Night Football, Eagles and Cowboys. This has been 3.5 all week long in favor of the homestanding Cowboys, and it remains 3.5, total at 51.5, and I said it earlier on the show this week, I think the Cowboys for me are going to be the team where week after week, I say the most often this sentence, which is about which I'll say the most often, I just don't know if I can play a Cowboys game, because I just feel like their outcomes could be the most volatile of any team in the league this year, based on that offense, based on the sieve that defense can often be, even though we've seen a little bit of improvement from defense. Cowboys by 3.5, 51.5.
If you happen to live in a jurisdiction, I would not recommend this incredibly often, but if you happen to live in a jurisdiction where you have all books available to you, there is a 3 and a 4 available currently. Hmm. So there is a 3 and a 4 available out there currently on this game.
So are you suggesting laying the 3 and taking the 4 is what you're saying?
Right.
Just to clarify for people, that way you might very likely be in a favorable position.
Yes. But with a game that is, you know, probably going to be pretty closely contested in that situation. So, look, there's no official injury report on this because, again, it's a Monday night game, so they don't have to put it out quite yet. That being said, Amari Cooper, it came out today, beat reporter, saying it does look like he is going to play even with that rib injury that has limited him in practice this week. And, of course, they're getting healthier as well, this Cowboys team, and they're getting guys back from the COVID list and stuff, so they should be a little bit better. On the Eagles side of things, if you look back at that game against the 49ers, and I think this is maybe why I'm a little bit on the Packers as well in that game against the 49ers, the Eagles had multiple opportunities to seize control of that game. They had multiple different opportunities to really take it. One, they were in the red zone multiple times that they squandered, and it was questionable play calling. I think that this Eagles coaching staff is sharp enough to understand where their deficiencies were last week and where they can make some improvements, call in plays, maybe trying to put themselves in more favorable positions once they get into the red zone. I lean taking the points here, Gil, but this is probably one that won't make it into my account. Like you said, just there's a lot of volatility here. I think that this is, I know people have been saying some of these other games that have the widest range of outcomes on the week. I think this is one of the games that has the widest range of outcomes to me. I think that this is one of those games where it would not surprise me in the least bit if the Cowboys come out and just light this thing completely up, or if they get into a slog with this Eagles team and we see just an incredibly ugly game. I don't have a great feel for this one, so probably not going to make the account.
Yeah, not a big bet for me, but I actually did. It's not even on my list. I bet a couple hours before the show, just kind of seeing injury reports and stuff today. I bought it down to 3 and laid the 3 with Dallas. I do think that I tend to lean on that side of things, Matt, where it's just going to be too much offense for the Eagles to handle on the Dallas side of the ball and not enough offense from the Eagles side to keep them in it. Yeah. But I don't know. I've been wrong on this Eagles team at least once big time so far. This year.
Of the two outcomes, if you're looking at a total of 52, the two outcomes is more likely that the Cowboys win in a run out than with a total of 52, something like that. I think the Eagles' path to victory obviously is to try to limit this Cowboys team, and I don't think that that's kind of how this is set up. So yeah, it would be that side for me or nothing.
I didn't expect to intersperse the football talk with lots of interesting little baseball quirks, but while we were talking about Juan Soto, Wander Franco back with the Rays, just reached base in his 40th consecutive game. I mentioned earlier the all-time record, Ted Williams, 84. So Wander Franco, man, 40 in a row.
Also, I needed to look back at this. 27 days ago, Cardinals, yes, no playoff. Yes, price was 15-1.
Yeah. I talked about 12-1 like 2 weeks ago. It's unbelievable. We'll come back. We will look at our Circa contest entry. We'll flesh it out next on VSiN's Primetime Action.
You are looking live at Primetime Action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Make this football season your best sports betting season ever. Start your VSiN free trial today to get full access to our sports betting experts, including 24/7 video streaming, daily best bet emails, betting splits with the money and ticket percentages on every game, plus full access to VSiN.com data and analysis. You get everything that VSiN has to offer for only $22 per month. Sign up now at VSiN.com/subscribe. Did we have a three-run homer in this Red Sox game?
We do. Rafael Devers
with a three-run ding-dong, 7-3. So not out of the woods yet, the Yankees.
Well, I guess we didn't see Dylan Cease. I guess he got hit with, he got a comebacker in the sixth, removed from the game. Of course, the White Sox, one of your teams very live for the World Series, and him being one of their top guys. So, yeah, took a comebacker in the sixth inning and was removed from the game. So we will hope that he is okay.
Yeah, for sure. Ooh, yeah, we didn't have that screen on. We have every other baseball game.
I know, we had every other one on except for that one.
Yeah. Okay, guys. Could I ask this question before we get to our Circa Millions entries? Because let's give the DraftKings contest a little bit of love. This is from this is on Twitter, at Beating the Book. Again, Beating the Book for me, Matt Brown M2 for Matt, and Kelly Veasan for Kelly, curiously, who has his own name but doesn't use it on Twitter. Mm-hmm. It's a whole other conversation. This is from Frank Chukagian. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Frank.
What's up, Frank?
Playing Millionaire Pick'em Contest on DraftKings. When's the best time to take a bye week? I have three entries. So that's the quirk of the DraftKings contest, where you can take a bye week. And so he's just wondering when he should take it. Now, I would have to know the exact rules. Like, can you just, I think you get to a week where you just don't like anything and then you just take a bye.
That, or since we don't know what week 18 is going to look like in a new 17-game season.
Yeah.
Where it could be completely wacky and
bonkers.
That's right. Like, we have no idea what a week 18 is. We've never seen one before.
Week 17 was bad enough. Yeah. Can't imagine what week 18 will be like. Because it'll be that much more, you know, teams already clinched, having clinched, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so it looks only 16 weeks count towards your total. So you get to choose 1 week to take off.
One week or 2 weeks? If it's 16, because they're 18 weeks, remember 17.
Maybe they're not counting the last one. I'm reading on the rules right now. Only 16 weeks count towards your total. You can choose 1 week to take off.
All right. Well, reading tweets on the fly. Maybe we should have prepped for that one. All right. As for our Circa Million entry, we have a Circa Million 3 entry here. We're combined, Matt Kelly and I. Our VEASAN primetime action entry. Okay. So here's how we do it. If the three of us, we all submitted our five picks to Kelly. Matt and I did. Kelly had his own five. If three of us match, it's one of our five picks against the spread. If two of us match, it would probably take a major objection from the third person to not have as one of our picks. And then the others will be filled up by those that have one vote. Although last week we went off the grid and we took the Steelers.
We went off the board last week. That's right.
Yeah, that didn't work out so well.
All right.
Fortunately, the other option lost as well, because that would have been a big bummer.
Yeah. I'm the holdout on the Bucs. Let it through.
Okay.
I lean that way anyway.
So all of us picked the Cardinals. All of us picked the Browns. So they're in. And then Kelly just seated on the Buccaneers. Matt and I apparently both had the Buccaneers at -1.5. So we have three picks: Cardinals, Browns, and Buccaneers. Now comes, and there's a conflicting vote at the bottom. Me and Matt went oppo on the Chargers and Chiefs.
That was the other odd one. I had the Chiefs in the contest. He didn't, even though he bet them.
Oh.
And you had Chargers in the contest.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Juan Soto line out to the shortstop. What are we doing? Do we feel that the Bosa absence?
Toss it out.
Toss it out.
Yeah, I think it's always, if people conflict, right?
You don't even love it so much, right?
I don't. Yeah. I don't.
Yeah, I think we just toss it out.
So we toss that out. Okay, so Titans, Packers, Lions, Bengals, Patriots. Among those, we will choose two.
So what? Top two are mine. Middle two are Matt. Last one is
the Patriots. Yep. Well, top two are Matt. Titans, Packers.
No, that's
Kelly. Oh, that's Kelly. Kelly, how strongly do you feel about the Titans and the Packers?
You know what? Titans, though, I liked a lot better last night when I was, the Carson Wentz stuff was a little bit more up in the air. I still like it at 5.5, though, laying less than 6 against Colts. Colts haven't shown us much. I think Titans are going to be able to run all over that team. I do like it. I like Packers getting that hook on Sunday night. So those would be mine. But you know what? I could totally play. Bengals were on my short list. I think Matt made some great points for the Lions, and I've always leaned to the Patriots the whole side this week, just kind of like Matt said earlier, was hoping it was 2.5 and not 3.
The Packers are 3.5 in the contest?
Packers are 3.5 in the contest, yes.
How strongly do you feel about your Lions and Bengals, man?
Well, what's funny is so two of the ones on the list, I actually have bets. So I have the Packers and I have the Patriots as actual bets, but I didn't put them in as contest picks. And then
this is what I was scratching my head about earlier.
The Bengals I have in a teaser, so I guess I have a bet on them as well. And I took a piece of the Lions. I took a smaller piece of the Lions. So I do have them in.
I will say this of those picks. The Lions was a pretty convincing argument you made earlier. And I know it takes us to sort of hold our nose on that one, but the Ravens are just kind of decimated. When we went through that game,
like we said, there's for sure four starters out, three of which are on the defensive side, and then a whole slew of other guys that are a couple of backups, like key rotation guys that are out for sure, and then a whole slew of guys that are questionable as well. There's just, I don't know. I think that there's just enough firepower on that Lions team to keep this thing inside of.
I don't disagree, and I know Matt's not a big believer in this, but like, if you want to talk spots, this is not a good spot for the Ravens. You get done with that Chiefs victory, go into Detroit, and then you got to get ready to go to Denver next week. Like, this is a bad sandwich game in their schedule.
By the way, my case for the Patriots, I don't really think I need to elaborate. It's Bill Belichick against Jameis Winston.
I have a bet in for that.
And that would be my simplest breakdown of that too, and why I lean that way. That's where I'm like, I cannot argue. Honestly, any of the ones we have on that list that are what single votes ones, I either got close to picking or that I left off, like Lions, Bengals, Patriots. Bengals, Patriots, I got close to picking anyways, and Lions, I think we laid out a great case for on the show.
I mean, if we look here, I think we know for sure the one that we would be on an island essentially would be if we took the Lions. Nobody's playing the Lions.
True dad.
Yeah, it kind of makes me like it more now. So, especially since we've picked 10 favorites in the first 2 weeks and it's not doing so well for us.
Like, nobody's playing the Lions. I think that's for certain.
Make the case again to me for the Packers, because I have trouble with that one.
It's less interesting to me now they're going to be down two left tackles in this game. Yeah. It's less interesting to me now than when I made the bet. That's just, you know, we didn't have a great injury report last week, but there are certain things, certain positions in the NFL, left tackle being one of them, that is very, 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 very important. And when you lose your starter, who, by the way, Bakhtiari is one of the best in the league as it is anyway, and then you have a guy that's actually filled in fairly admirably, even though he slid over from guard, and now he's not going to be able to go either. Now you're going for your third guy at left tackle. That's just a lot to overcome, you know, a lot of times. So
I think we go Lions and Patriots.
That's what I was leaning towards. I was leaning towards Lions and Patriots.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Lions-Patriots. I'm with you.
Again, we're going to go through, and this is not end-all, be-all, but we're just going to say, starting left tackle, Ronnie Staley is out. Starting defensive end, Derek Wolfe is out. Starting nose tackle, Brandon Williams, is out. Starting linebacker, Justin Houston, is out. They are all out for this game for sure. Jalen Ferguson got added to the COVID list as well. And then you have Lamar Jackson, Hollywood Brown, Pernell McPhee, Jimmy Smith, Tavon Young, and Deshaun Elliott, who are all questionable for the game. Now, they could all play. That, you know, we've seen before. People get listed as questionable, and then it's basically just mind games that the coaches are trying to play. But that being said, that's a lot of guys listed as questionable as well. Lamar Jackson's was an illness, too. So non-COVID, obviously, but an illness. His wasn't even a physical thing, so maybe his tummy's hurting him or something.
His tummy.
You know?
That story changed in one day, right? Schefter first reported that as him being banged up from doing that flip into the end zone.
Right.
And then it was later the day the team said it was an illness. So, like, I'm kind of like, I don't even know what to believe there. It feels like the team's covering up for him a little bit of maybe banging himself up, flipping into the end zone. But, I mean, either way, he ain't 100%, it sounds like.
I think he'll be fine. I have nothing to base
that
on.
Hopefully not too fine, because we're taking Lions plus eight, right?
No.
I mean, and here's the deal. Even if all these guys were playing, or even though all these guys do play, like, it's still 8 points.
Yes, at home.
Against a team that isn't like a go out and blow you out type team, right? I mean, if they do what they want to do, they're going to run the ball a ton. Like, I'm
very comfortable with the Lions for the reason that it's not going to be a very popular pick. And I just have not felt that the Lions are nearly as bad as people are making them out to be. Weeks one and two. I actually think they were, I mean, look, the Niners got the best of them. The score was cosmetic at the end. But last week, I had the Packers in Survivor. I felt really lucky getting by the Lions.
Cards, Browns, Bucks, Lions, Pats.
Those are our contest picks. We'll tell you about our actual bets. They're in our accounts. Teasers and straights next on VSiN's Primetime Action.
You are looking live at Primetime Action with Gil Alexander and Matt Brown on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Back on Primetime Action, just like the legendary Brent Musburger said right there, it's Gil Alexander, Matt Brown, and Kelly Bidlin. Yankees did get one of those three runs back, so they're up 8-3 now on the Red Sox. Still in the top of the seventh, the Yankees with runners at first and second, and a 3-1 count coming, so the Yankees making some noise. And, of course, the team that they're scoreboard watching, the Blue Jays, trail the Twins 3-0 still in that one, so that would be a wonderful turn of events for the Yankees that would give them a two-game cushion over the Blue Jays in the race for the number two wildcard position in the American League. Couple things before we get to our football picks that were just sort of random things that came up on the screens here in studio over the course of the show, and I brought them. I wanted to bring up one. You brought it up first, and then the other one I just brought up. One, in tennis, Emma Raducanu, who just won the U.S. Open at 18 years old, just split with her coach, which just seems like, could you imagine being her coach? The cruelest thing in the world. You have coached me up to the most unbelievable upset in a slam in God knows how long, and now I'm going to go with somebody else who's, like, you know, been on the tour.
That's it. I mean, like I said, I feel like, I said this off air, I just feel like that's one of those, someone getting in a young person's ear and kind of dropping little bits of poison. Because, again, this guy was with her in juniors. This guy was in her with her through juniors. This guy was with her through this win right here. And then, like, again, it wasn't like, we see these coach splits, too, when, and it's just a natural deal. Like, we see these coach splits after someone goes in a slump and they're like, okay, I got to change things up. Obviously, something is not jiving right now. That's when we see these coach, not after you just like just got to the
US like, Open.
You just got to where you were trying to get to, and they're like, oh, thanks. Later on.
Didn't drop a set. The other one was, and this is just, you kind of like almost snicker when you see it. You sort of shrug and laugh a little. Kawhi Leonard, timetable for return unknown from the Clippers.
That seems less than
optimal.
Less than desirable.
That's bizarre. I believe, I'm reading this article on ESPN right now. So this is Lawrence Frank, president of basketball operations, and he was talking, still has, quote, significant rehab from his ACL injury to do, and, quote, no one knows the time frame for when the Clipper star will return and whether he will play this season.
And didn't, whether he will play
whether
this season.
Whether he will play this season.
Didn't he, like, so he got hurt in the playoffs, then he never played again,
right,
even though it was like, okay, was he going to play or not?
It was a knee sprain.
Knee sprain. But, and then didn't he wait, like, a uncomfortable amount of time after the season before he actually got the surgery, as I recall?
I mean, in hindsight, I don't know how long it was, but at the time, yes, it felt like it was a long time before
correct,
he decided to get surgery. Like Lawrence Frank, it goes on, I think it goes, quote, I think at this point, it's just no one knows when you're dealing from an ACL injury. We can't give a time frame. But I'm like, this is
just, I mean, great player, great player, champion with the Raptors, but just so, so difficult for a franchise to deal with the aloof sort of part of it, and then the just strange, vague status update.
I think it makes things tough sometimes. And listen, I know there's probably a lot of people sitting at home right now being like, it's the NBA, it doesn't matter until, like, you get to the playoffs anyways.
Well,
like,
he was in the playoffs and it mattered. He never showed up afterwards.
I mean, exactly. But and I don't know. I'm one of those people to a degree, but, like, you also can't bury yourself in a hole. Like, look at what the Lakers had to roll into the playoffs with last year as a 7 seed, had to fight to get that seed, and then they lose to the Suns in that first round. You can't, I don't think you can bank on, let's get to the playoffs and we'll be there in the end.
Those are two things that caught our eye tonight. Go ahead.
How about we're still getting headlines of every time Josh Gordon gets back reinstated into the league.
Oh, yeah.
He was reinstated into the league again.
For his fourth time?
I think he has been suspended, if I remember correctly, 6 times over the course of his career.
Oh, my gosh.
We grasp onto that 2013 season.
That's right.
Where he was the greatest wide receiver, basically, you've ever, making all kinds of ridiculous catches, going, I mean, he had 1,650 or something like that receiving yard. It was absurd. Like, he was averaging 120 yards a game. It was just this fantastic season. But nothing has come even remotely close since, and we just grasp onto this memory of 2013, and he's 30 years old now. Like, wide receivers start to fall apart at 30, and yet we're getting headlines about, like, Josh Gordon, who hadn't done anything in the league in 7 years.
8 years ago. That's how long ago it was. It's amazing. And then the last thing here before we get to our picks, again, just to flesh those out, because we've kind of given them earlier, but that changed the wild card format to the, you know, it used to be 3 games on Saturday, 3 games on Sunday. It used to be like when they went to seven teams per conference. But now it's going to be 2 on Saturday, 3 on Sunday, and 1 on Monday night. And it does beg the question, one of those teams is going to play on Monday night and then, like, play a short week against the team with a bye?
Yeah.
So they kind of get screwed on a Monday night, right? even if you put it back to Sunday the next week.
I mean, it would have to be the latest game on Sunday.
But still,
you're losing a day.
So you're going to have a team that like had a 14-day rest, not against an 8- or 7-day rest, but against a 6-day rest. Mm-hmm. I mean, that doesn't seem right.
It's one of those, like, it seems good for fans for us to, like, watch over 3 different days. But, yeah, is it fair? I don't really know.
Is that, like, another ding for the 7th seed? Like, is they going to make it, oh, well, sorry, you're the 7th seed. You're going to have to. But the 7th seed has to play somebody, so it can't just be the 7th seed, right? Even if you did that way.
Yeah, right. It would be the two, right. Then you'd be the 2 seed.
Right. One team's
going
to. Yeah, somebody's going to get screwed.
Hey.
Yeah.
Good for content.
Good.
We'll take it.
We're on the air. We don't care.
And yes, Kelly, his 6th suspension since 2013 and his 5th for some form of substance
abuse.
That's
incredible.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Maybe playing football isn't the best.
I mean, what age is he even at this point?
He's 30.
30.
I mean, like who's calling him?
You know what? You know who really needs a wide receiver? The Saints. Like, they probably should call him. Like, they really need a wide receiver.
It's Washington on the phone.
Yeah.
All right, Matt, you start because you have 75
All right,
bets.
So, well, I mean, listen, I can just basically tell you the teams, and then we can just glue it all together here. But, yes, I have a lot riding on the Panthers, which fortunately got home last night. I need the Browns at 1.5. I need the Bucks to cover 7.5-point dogs in that one again. That number flipped, but I was able to get it on the good side for the Bucks. I need the Cardinals to cover 1. I need the Bengals to keep it within 10 against Ben Roethlisberger and this offense. So basically a combination of all of those, and you can just mesh this all up. Browns, Bucks, Browns, Cardinals, Bucks, Cardinals, all of those teasers, every one of those needs to get home. Browns, Bears under 46. Again, I explained the reasoning for that. Both teams want to play slow. I feel like they're going to try to protect Fields in his first start there. And then I have some straight bets. I like the Cardinals at 7 a lot. That one I still like. I like the Patriots at 2.5 a lot. That one I still like. The Chiefs and the Packers I do not like near as much now. A couple of key injuries on the Chiefs side on the defense. And then the Packers, again, not only starting left tackle out, but the backup left tackle out for them as well. So don't really love those near as much. But Cardinals and Pats I still do love.
All right, Kelly, what do you got?
I will – a bunch of teasers, some to close out from the Panthers, Cardinals. I'm heavily involved in the Cardinals, just like Matt said. I did not play it straight at 7, but I've got four teasers, actually, because one of these is duplicated even on here. 4 teasers open with the Cardinals heading in. So open to close that out. Did tease down the Browns in one of them. Did tease down the Bills in one of them, which I don't believe either one of you guys touched the Bills this week, right? We talked a little bit about that through the week, but I did think getting under 3 against Washington, I still like that. I like this Bills team enough. Like that enough of a play to play that still. So I hit that, and then I took the Vikings up over 7. Again, lost 2 games by a combined 4 points. I'm a little concerned about this, the injury news for them, but I think this is going to be a closer high-scoring game, a lot like we saw last week against their game against the Cardinals. And I think we're going to see a lot with Seattle coming in town. Only straight bet that I made was laying the 5.5 with the Titans, banking on Carson Wentz either not playing or not being able to play as effectively, not being able to get outside the pocket. Matt talked a little bit about that earlier. Limits his mobility, you would think, at least with 2 sprained ankles. So laid the 5.5 there, and then completely agree with Matt on Bears-Browns under. That was when we were kind of talking about throughout the week. But once Fields got named the starter there, expect him to start struggle a little bit. And Browns, I think you're working in Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry out. You're going to run the ball until they stop you and make you do something different. So I think this could be a low-scoring game in Cleveland on Sunday, like the under 46 there.
Not much different for me. Panthers legs are in on the two teasers here, and then the third big one. I have the Panthers with the Browns, have the Panthers with the Cardinals, and then the 6-team wacky plus 350 teaser where the Panthers are in, and then everybody else is a jambalaya of teaser legs. Browns, Cardinals, did put the Bills in this one, Kelly. Browns and Buccaneers, not quite to the 7.5, but to the 7 earlier this week. All those are in the account. The only straight bet that I'm looking, I think, at this point to make, if the Chargers somehow got to 7.5, I'd make that. I'm waiting for the Patriots thing to tick down to 2.5, and I'll definitely play the Patriots. Looking for that. We've done all we can do. Boom, sticky, boom, to get out of here. Enjoy your weekend. Good luck with all your bets, football or otherwise. Let's not blow the Ryder Cup, USA. Let's not do that.
And get it done, Browns and Cardinals.
That's right.
Going to be a bad Monday in here if you don't.
Monday. It's going to be a bad Monday.
Monday with the Bengals.
Nightcap Circa next with Tim Murray and Sean King. Enjoy. Have a great weekend from all of us at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.